in a black kefta, his chin resting on one pale hand. Only one Grisha wore black, was permitted to wear black. Colonel Ravsky stood beside him, speaking in tones far too low for me to hear. I stared, torn between fear and fascination. He's too young, I thought. This darkling had been commanding the Grisha since before I was born. But the man seated above me on the dais didn't look much older than I did. He had a sharp, beautiful face, a shock of thick black hair, and clear gray eyes that glimmered like quartz. I knew that the more powerful Grisha were said to live long lives, and darklings were the most powerful of them all. But I felt the wrongness of it, and I remembered Eva's words. He's not natural. None of them are. A high tinkling laugh sounded from the crowd that had formed near me at the base of the dais. I recognized the beautiful girl in blue, the one from the Ethereal-Kai coach, who had been so taken with Mal. She whispered something to her chestnut-haired friend, and they both laughed again. My cheeks burned as I imagined what I must look like in a torn, shabby coat after a journey into the Shadowfold and a battle with a flock of hungry Volcra. But I lifted my chin and looked the beautiful girl right in the eye. "Laugh all you want," I thought grimly. "Whatever you're whispering, I've heard worse." She held my gaze for a moment and then looked away. I enjoyed a brief flash of satisfaction before Colonel Ravsky's voice brought me back to the reality of my situation.
"Bring them," he said.
I turned to see more soldiers, leading a battered and bewildered group of people into the tent and up the aisle. Among them I spotted the soldier who had been beside me when the Volcra attacked, and the senior cartographer, his usually tidy coat torn and dirty, his face brightened. My distress grew as I realized that they were the survivors from my sand skiff, and that they had been brought before the Darkling as witnesses. What had happened out there on the fold? What did they think I had done? My breath caught as I recognized the trackers in the group. I saw Mikhail first, his shaggy red hair bobbing above the crowd on his thick neck, and leaning on him, bandages peeking out from his bloodied shirt, was a very pale, very tired-looking Mal. My legs went weak, and I pressed a hand to my mouth to stifle a sob. Mal was alive. I wanted to push through the crowd and throw my arms around him, but it was all I could do to stay standing as relief flooded through me. Whatever happened here, we would be all right. We had survived the fold, and we would survive this madness, too. I looked back at the dais, and my elation withered. The Darkling was looking directly at me. He was still listening to Colonel Ravsky, his posture just as relaxed as it had been before, but his gaze was focused, intent. He turned his attention back to the colonel, and I realized that I had been holding my breath. When the bedraggled group of survivors reached the base of the dais, Colonel Ravsky ordered,
"Capitan, report."
The captain stood at attention and answered in an expressionless voice.
"Approximately 30 minutes into the crossing, we were set upon by a large flock of Volcra. We were pinned down and sustaining heavy casualties. I was fighting on the starboard side of the skiff. At that point, I saw..."
The soldier hesitated, and when he spoke again, his voice sounded less sure.
"I don't know exactly what I saw. A blaze of light. Bright as noon. Brighter. Like staring into the sun."
The crowd erupted into murmurs. The survivors from the skiff were nodding, and I found myself nodding along with them. I had seen the blaze of light, too. The soldier snapped back to attention and continued.
"The Volcra scattered, and the light disappeared. I ordered us back to dry dock immediately."
"And the girl?" asked the Darkling. With a cold stab of fear, I realized he was talking about me.
"I didn't see the girl, moi sovereigny."
The Darkling raised an eyebrow, turning to the other survivors.
"Who actually saw what happened?"
His voice was cool, distant, almost disinterested. The survivors broke into muttered discussion with one another. Then slowly, timidly, the senior cartographer stepped forward. I felt a keen twinge of pity for him. I'd never seen him so disheveled. His sparse brown hair was standing at all angles on his head. His fingers plucked nervously at his ruined coat.
"Tell us what you saw," said Ravsky.
The cartographer licked his lips. We were under attack, he said tremulously. There was fighting all around. Such noise, so much blood. One of the boys, Alexei, was taken. It was terrible, terrible. His hands fluttered like two startled birds. I frowned. If the cartographer had seen Alexei attacked, then why hadn't he tried to help? The old man cleared his throat. They were everywhere. I saw one go after her.
Who?
Asked Ravsky. Alina! Alina Starkov, one of my assistants. The beautiful girl in blue smirked and leaned over to whisper to her friend. I clenched my jaw. How nice to know that the Grisha could still maintain their snobbery in the midst of hearing about a Volkra attack.
Go on, Ravsky pressed.
I saw one go after her and the tracker, the cartographer said, gesturing to Mal. And where were you? I asked angrily. The question was out of my mouth before I could think better of it. Every face turned to look at me, but I didn't care. You saw the Volker attacking us! You saw that thing take Alexei! Why didn't you help? There was nothing I could do, he pleaded, his hands spread wide. They were everywhere. It was chaos. Alexei might still be alive if you'd gotten off your bony ass to help us. There was a gasp and a burble of laughter from the crowd. The cartographer flushed angrily, and I felt instantly sorry. If I got out of this mess, I was going to be in very big trouble.
Enough, boomed Ravsky. Tell us what you saw, cartographer.
The crowd hushed, and the cartographer licked his lips again. The tracker went down. She was beside him, that thing, that Volkra was coming at them. I saw it on top of her, and then she lit up. The Grisha erupted into exclamations of disbelief and derision. A few of them laughed. If I hadn't been so scared and baffled, I might have been tempted to join them. Maybe I shouldn't have been so hard on him, I thought, looking at the rumpled cartographer. The poor man clearly took a bump to the head during the attack.
I saw it! He shouted over the din. Light came out of her!
Some of the Grisha were jeering openly now, but others were yelling.
Let him speak!
The cartographer looked desperately to his fellow survivors for support, and to my amazement I saw some of them nod. Had everyone gone mad? Did they actually think I had chased off the Volkra?
This is absurd, said a voice from the crowd.
It was the beautiful girl in blue.
What are you suggesting, old man? That you found us a sun summoner?
I'm not suggesting anything, he protested. I'm only telling what I saw.
It's not impossible, said a heavy-set Grisha.
He wore the purple kefta of the Materialnik, a member of the Order of Fabricators.
There are stories.
Don't be ridiculous,
the girl laughed, her voice thick with scorn.
The man had his wits rattled by the Volkra.
The crowd erupted into a loud argument. I suddenly felt very tired. My shoulder throbbed where the Volkra had dug its talons into me. I didn't know what the cartographer or any of the others on the skiff thought they had seen. I just knew this was all some kind of terrible mistake, and at the end of this farce, I would be the one looking foolish. I cringed when I thought of the teasing I would take when this was over, and hopefully it would be over soon.
Quiet,
the Darkling barely seemed to raise his voice, but the command sliced through the crowd and silence fell. I suppressed a shiver. He might not find this joke so funny. I just hoped he wouldn't blame me for it. The Darkling wasn't known for mercy. Maybe I should be worrying less about being teased and more about being exiled to Sebaea. Or worse. Eva had said that the Darkling had once ordered a Corporal Guy Healer to seal a traitor's mouth shut permanently. The man's lips had been grafted together, and he had starved to death. At the time, Alexei and I had laughed and dismissed it as another of Eva's crazy stories. Now I wasn't so sure.
"Tracker," the Darkling said softly. "What did you see?"
As one, the crowd turned to Mal, who looked uneasily at me and then back at the Darkling.
"Nothing. I didn't see anything."
"The girl was right beside you."
Mal nodded.
"You must have seen something."
Mal glanced at me again. His look weighted with worry and fatigue. I had never seen him so pale, and I wondered how much blood he had lost. I felt a surge of helpless anger. He was badly hurt. He should be resting instead of standing here answering ridiculous questions.
"Just tell us what you remember, Tracker,"
commanded Ravsky. Mal shrugged slightly and winced at the pain from his wounds.
"I was on my back on the deck. Alina was next to me. I saw the Volker diving and I knew it was coming for us. I said something and..."
"What did you say?"
The Darkling's cool voice cut through the room.
"I don't remember,"
Mal said. I recognized the stubborn set of his jaw and knew he was lying.
He did remember.
"I smelled the Volkra, saw it swooping down on us. Alina screamed and then I couldn't see anything. The world was just shining."
"So you didn't see where the light was coming from?"
Ravsky asked.
"Alina isn't... she couldn't..." Mal shook his head. "We're from the same... village."
I noticed that tiny pause, the orphan's pause.
"If she could do anything like that, I would know."
The Darkling looked at Mal for a long moment and then glanced back at me.
"We all have our secrets," he said.
Mal opened his mouth as if to say more, but the Darkling put up a hand to silence him. Anger flashed across Mal's features, but he shut his mouth. His lips pressed into a grim line. The Darkling rose from his chair. He gestured and the soldiers stepped back, leaving me alone to face him. The tent seemed eerily silent. Slowly he descended the steps. I had to fight the urge to back away from him as he came to a halt in front of me.
"Now, what do you say, Alina Starkov?"
he asked pleasantly. I swallowed. My throat was dry and my heart was careening from beat to beat, but I knew I had to speak. I had to make him understand that I had no part in any of this. "There's been some kind of mistake," I said hoarsely. "I didn't do anything. I don't know how we survived." The Darkling appeared to consider this. Then he crossed his arms, cocked his head to one side.
"Well," he said, his voice bemused, "I like to think that I know everything that happens in Ravka, and that if I had a sun summoner living in my own country, I'd be aware of it."
Soft murmurs of assent rose from the crowd, but he ignored them, watching me closely.
"But something powerful stopped the Volkra and saved the king's skiffs."
He paused and waited as if he expected me to solve this conundrum for him. My chin rose stubbornly. "I didn't do anything," I said. "Not one thing." The side of the Darkling's mouth twitched as if he were repressing a smile. His eyes slid over me from head to toe and back again. I felt like something strange and shiny, a curiosity that had washed up on a lake shore, that he might kick aside with his boot.
"Is your memory as faulty as your friend's?"
he asked, and bobbed his head toward Mal. I faltered. What did I remember? Terror, darkness, pain, Mal's blood, his life flowing out of him beneath my hands, the rage that filled me at the thought of my own helplessness.
"Hold out your arm," said the Darkling.
What?
We've wasted enough time. Hold out your arm.
A cold spike of fear went through me. I looked around in panic, but there was no help to be had. The soldiers stared forward, stone-faced. The survivors from the skiff looked frightened and tired. The Grisha regarded me curiously. The girl in blue was smirking. Mal's pale face seemed to have gone even whiter, but there was no answer in his worried eyes. Shaking, I held out my left arm.
Push up your sleeve.
I didn't do anything. I'd meant to say it loudly, to proclaim it, but my voice sounded frightened and small. The Darkling looked at me, waiting. I pushed up my sleeve. He spread his arms, and terror washed through me as I saw his palms filling with something black that pooled and curled through the air like ink in water.
Now,
he said in that same soft conversational voice, as if we were sitting together drinking tea, as if I did not stand before him shaking.
Let's see what you can do.
He brought his hands together, and there was a sound like a thunderclap. I gasped as undulating darkness spread from his clasped hands, spilling in a black wave over me and the crowd. I was blind. The room was gone. Everything was gone. I cried out in terror as I felt the Darkling's fingers close around my bare wrist. Suddenly, my fear receded. It was still there, cringing like an animal inside me, but it had been pushed aside by something calm and sure and powerful, something vaguely familiar. I felt a call ring through me, and to my surprise, I felt something in me rise up to answer. I pushed it away, pushed it down. Somehow I knew that if that thing got free, it would destroy me.
Nothing there, the Darkling murmured.
I realized how very close he was to me in the dark. My panicked mind seized on his words. Nothing there, that's right. Nothing. Nothing at all. Now leave me be. And to my relief, that struggling thing inside me seemed to lie back down, leaving the Darkling's call unanswered.
Not so fast,
he whispered. I felt something cold press against the inside of my forearm. In the same moment that I realized it was a knife, the blade cut into my skin. Pain and fear rushed through me. I cried out. The thing inside me roared to the surface, speeding toward the Darkling's call. I couldn't stop myself. I answered. The world exploded into blazing white light. The darkness shattered around us like glass. For a moment I saw the faces of the crowd, their mouths wide with shock, as the tent filled with shining sunlight, the air shimmering with heat. Then the Darkling released his grip, and with his touch went that peculiar sense of certainty that had possessed me. The radiant light disappeared, leaving ordinary candlelight in its place. But I could still feel the warm and inexplicable glow of sunshine on my skin. My legs gave way, and the Darkling caught me up against his body with one surprisingly strong arm.
I guess you only look like a mouse,
he whispered in my ear, and then beckoned to one of his personal guard.
Take her,
he said, handing me over to the opritchnik, who reached out his arm to support me. I felt myself flush at the indignity of being handed over like a sack of potatoes, but I was too shaky and confused to protest. Blood was running down my arm from the cut the Darkling had given me.
Ivan,
shouted the Darkling. A tall Heartrender rushed from the dais to the Darkling's side.
Get her to my couch. I want her surrounded by an armed guard at all times. Take her to the little palace and stop for nothing.
Ivan nodded.
And bring a healer to see to her wounds.
Wait, I protested, but the Darkling was already turning away. I grabbed hold of his arm, ignoring the gasp that rose up from the Grisha onlookers. There's been some kind of mistake. I'm not... My voice trailed off as the Darkling turned slowly to me, his slate eyes drifting to where my hand gripped his sleeve. I let go, but I wasn't giving up that easily.
I'm not what you think I am,
I whispered desperately. The Darkling stepped closer to me and said, his voice so low that only I could hear.
I doubt you have any idea what you are.
Then he nodded to Ivan.
Go.
The Darkling turned his back on me and walked swiftly toward the raised dais where he was swarmed by advisors and ministers, all talking loudly and rapidly. Ivan grabbed me roughly by the arm. Come on.
Ivan, called the Darkling. Mind your tone. She is Grisha now.
Ivan reddened slightly and gave a small bow, but his grip on my arm didn't slacken as he pulled me down the aisle. You have to listen to me, I gasped as I struggled to keep up with his long strides. I'm not Grisha. I'm a mapmaker. I'm not even a very good mapmaker. Ivan ignored me. I looked back over my shoulder, searching the crowd. Mal was arguing with the captain from the sandskiff. As if he felt my eyes on him, he looked up and met my gaze. I could see my own panic and confusion mirrored in his white face. I wanted to cry out to him, to run to him, but the next moment, he was gone, swallowed up by the crowd. Chapter 4 Tears of frustration welled in my eyes as Ivan dragged me out of the tent and into the late afternoon sun. He pulled me down a low hill to the road where the Darkling's black coach was already waiting, surrounded by a ring of mounted Grisha Ethereali, and flanked by lines of armed cavalry. Two of the Darkling's gray-clad guards waited by the door to the coach, with a woman and a fair-haired man, both of whom wore Corporalki red.
Get in,
commanded Ivan. Then, seeming to remember the Darkling's order, he added,
If you please.
No, I said.
What?
Ivan seemed genuinely surprised. The other Corporalki looked shocked. No, I repeated. I'm not going anywhere. There's been some kind of mistake. Ivan cut me off, taking a firmer grip on my arm.
The Darkling doesn't make mistakes, he said through gritted teeth. Get in the coach.
I don't want... Ivan lowered his head until his nose was just inches from mine and practically spat.
Do you think I care what you want? In a few hours' time, every Fjerdan spy and Shuhan assassin will know what happened on the Fold, and they'll be coming for you. Our only chance is to get you to Ols Alta and behind the palace walls before anyone else realizes what you are. Now get in the coach!
He shoved me through the door and followed me inside, throwing himself down on the seat opposite me in disgust. The other Corporalki joined him, followed by the Oprichniki guards who settled on either side of me. So I'm the Darkling's prisoner?
You're under his protection.
What's the difference? Ivan's expression was unreadable.
Pray you never find out.
I scowled and slumped back on the cushioned seat, then hissed in pain. I'd forgotten my wounds.
See to her,
Ivan said to the female Corporalnik. Her cuffs were embroidered in healer's gray. The woman switched places with one of the Oprichniki so that she could sit beside me. A soldier ducked his head inside the door.
We're ready,
he said.
Good, replied Ivan. Stay alert and keep moving. We'll only stop to change horses. If we stop before then, you'll know something is wrong.
The soldier disappeared, closing the door behind him. The driver didn't hesitate. With a cry and the snap of a whip, the coach lurched forward. I felt an icy tumble of panic. What was happening to me? I thought about just throwing open the coach door and making a run for it, but where would I run? We were surrounded by armed men in the middle of a military camp, and even if we weren't, where could I possibly go?
Please remove your coat,
said the woman beside me.
What? I need to see your wounds.
I considered refusing, but what was the point? I shrugged awkwardly out of my coat and let the healer ease my shirt over my shoulders. The Corporalki were the order of the living and the dead. I tried to focus on the living part, but I'd never been healed by a Grisha, and every muscle in my body tensed with fear. She took something out of a little satchel, and a sharp chemical scent filled the coach. I flinched as she cleaned the wounds, my fingers digging into my knees. When she was done, I felt a hot, prickling sensation between my shoulders. I bit down hard on my lip. The urge to scratch my back was almost unbearable. Finally, she stopped and pulled my shirt back into place. I flexed my shoulders carefully. The pain was gone.
"Now the arm,"
she said. I'd almost forgotten the cut from the Darkling's knife, but my wrist and hand were sticky with blood. She wiped the cut clean, and then held up my arm to the light.
"Try to stay still,"
she said,
"or there will be a scar."
I did my best, but the jostling of the coach made it difficult. The healer passed her hand slowly over the wound. I felt my skin throb with heat. My arm began to itch furiously, and as I watched in amazement, my flesh seemed to shimmer and move as the two sides of the cut knit together and the skin sealed shut. The itching stopped, and the healer sat back. I reached out and touched my arm. There was a slightly raised scar where the cut had been, but that was all.
"Thank you,"
I said in awe. The healer nodded.
"Give her your kefta," Ivan said to her.
The woman frowned but hesitated only a moment before she shrugged out of her red kefta and handed it to me. "Why do I need this?" I asked.
"Just take it," Ivan growled.
I took the kefta from the healer. She kept her face blank, but I could tell it pained her to part with it. Before I could decide whether or not to offer her my blood-stained coat, Ivan tapped the roof and the coach began to slow. The healer didn't even wait for it to stop moving before she opened the door and swung outside. Ivan pulled the door shut. The opreechnik slipped back into the seat beside me, and we were on our way once more.
"Where is she going?" I asked.
"Back to Kribirsk," replied Ivan. "We'll travel faster with less weight."
"You look heavier than she does," I muttered.
"Put on the kefta," he said.
"Why?"
"Because it's made with material kaikor cloth. It can withstand rifle fire."
I stared at him.
Was that even possible?
There were stories of Grisha withstanding direct gunshots and surviving what should have been fatal wounds. I'd never taken them seriously, but maybe fabricator handiwork was the truth behind those peasant tales.
"Do you all wear this stuff?"
I asked, as I pulled on the kefta.
"When we're in the field," said an opreechnik. I nearly jumped. It was the first time either of the guards had spoken. "Just don't get shot in the head," Ivan added with a condescending grin.
I ignored him. The kefta was far too large. It felt soft and unfamiliar, the fur lining warm against my skin. I chewed my lip. It didn't seem fair that opreechniki and Grisha wore core cloth while ordinary soldiers went without. Did our officers wear it too? The coach picked up speed. In the time it had taken for the healer to do her work, dusk had begun to fall, and we had left Kribirsk behind. I leaned forward, straining to see out the window, but the world outside was a twilight blur. I felt tears threatening again and blinked them back. A few hours ago, I'd been a frightened girl on my way into the unknown, but at least I'd known who and what I was. With a pang, I thought of the documents tent. The other surveyors might be at their work right now. Would they be mourning Alexei? Would they be talking about me and what had happened on the fold? I clutched the crumpled army issue coat I had bundled up on my lap. Surely this all had to be a dream. Some crazy hallucination brought on by the terrors of the Shadow Fold. I couldn't really be wearing a Grisha's kefta, sitting in the Darkling's coach, the same coach that had almost crushed me only yesterday. Someone lit a lamp inside the coach, and in the flickering light I could better see the silken interior. The seats were heavily cushioned black velvet. On the windows the Darkling's symbol had been cut into the glass, two overlapping circles, the sun in eclipse. Across from me, the two Grisha were studying me with open curiosity. Their red kefta were of the finest wool, embroidered lavishly in black and lined in black fur. The fair-haired Heartrender was lanky and had a long, melancholy face. Ivan was taller, broader, with wavy brown hair and sun-bronzed skin. Now that I bothered to look, I had to admit he was handsome. And he knows it, too. A big, handsome bully. I shifted restlessly in my seat, uncomfortable with their stares. I looked out the window, but there was nothing to see except the growing darkness and my own pale reflection. I looked back at the Grisha and tried to quash my irritation. They were still gawking at me. I reminded myself that these men could make my heart explode in my chest, but eventually I just couldn't stand it. "I don't do tricks, you know," I snapped. The Grisha exchanged a glance. "That was a pretty good trick back in the tent," Ivan said. I rolled my eyes. "Well, if I plan on doing anything exciting, I promise to give fair warning, so just take a nap or something." Ivan looked affronted. I felt a little snap of fear. But the fair-haired Korporalnik let out a bark of laughter.
"I am Fedyor," he said, "and this is Ivan."
"I know," I replied. Then, picturing Anna Kuya's disapproving glare, I added, "Very pleased to meet you." They exchanged an amused glance. I ignored them and wriggled back in my seat, trying to get comfortable. It wasn't easy with two heavily armed soldiers taking up most of the room. The coach hit a bump and jolted forward. "Is it safe?" I asked. "To be traveling at night?"
"No," Fedyor said. "But it would be considerably more dangerous to stop."
"Because people are after me now?" I said sarcastically.
"If not now, then soon,"
I snorted. Fedyor raised his eyebrows and said,
"For hundreds of years, the Shadowfold has been doing our enemies' work, closing off our ports, choking us, making us weak. If you're truly a Sun Summoner, then your power could be the key to opening up the fold, or maybe even destroying it. Ferdia and the Shuhan won't just stand by and let that happen."
I gaped at him. What did these people expect from me? And what would they do to me when they realized I couldn't deliver? "This is ridiculous," I muttered. Fedyor looked me up and down, then smiled slightly.
"Maybe," he said.
I frowned. He was agreeing with me, but I still felt insulted.
"How did you hide it?"
Ivan asked abruptly.
"What?"
"Your power," Ivan said impatiently.
"How did you hide it?"
"I didn't hide it. I didn't know it was there."
"That's impossible."
"And yet here we are," I said bitterly.
"Weren't you tested?"
A dim memory flashed through my mind. Three cloaked figures in the sitting room at Keremsin. A woman's haughty brow. "Of course I was tested."
"When?"
"When I was 8.
"That's very late," commented Ivan. "Why didn't your parents have you tested earlier?"
"Because they were dead," I thought, but didn't say. And no one paid much attention to Duke Keremsov's orphans. I shrugged.
"It doesn't make any sense,"
Ivan grumbled.
"That's what I've been trying to tell you."
I leaned forward, looking desperately from Ivan to Fedyor.
"I'm not what you think I am. I'm not Grisha. What happened in the fold? I don't know what happened, but I didn't do it."
"And what happened in the Grisha tent?"
asked Fedyor calmly.
"I can't explain that, but it wasn't my doing. The Darkling did something when he touched me."
Ivan laughed.
"He didn't do anything. He's an amplifier."
"A what?"
Fedyor and Ivan exchanged another glance.
"Forget it," I snapped. "I don't care."
Ivan reached inside his collar and removed something on a thin silver chain. He held it out for me to examine. My curiosity got the best of me, and I edged forward to get a better view. It looked like a cluster of sharp black claws. "What are they?"
"My amplifier," Ivan said with pride. "The claws from the forepaw of a Shareborn bear. I killed it myself when I left school and joined the Darkling's service."
He leaned back in his seat and tucked the chain into his collar.
"An amplifier increases a Grisha's power," said Fedyor. "But the power must be there to begin with."
"Do all Grisha have them?" I asked. Fedyor stiffened.
"No," he said. "Amplifiers are rare and hard to obtain." "Only the Darkling's most favored Grisha have them," Ivan said smugly.
I was sorry I'd asked.
The Darkling is a living amplifier, Fedyar said. That's what you felt.
Like the claws, that's his power?
One of his powers, corrected Ivan.
I pulled the kefta tighter around me, feeling suddenly cold.
I remembered the surety that had flooded through me with the Darkling's touch, and that strangely familiar sensation of a call echoing through me, a call that demanded an answer. It had been frightening, but exhilarating, too. In that moment, all my doubt and fear had been replaced by a kind of absolute certainty. I was no one, a refugee from an unnamed village, a scrawny, clumsy girl, hurtling alone through the gathering dark. But when the Darkling had closed his fingers around my wrist, I'd felt different, like something more. I shut my eyes and tried to focus, tried to remember that feeling of certainty, to bring that sure and perfect power into blazing life. But nothing happened. I sighed and opened my eyes. Ivan looked highly amused. The urge to kick him was almost overwhelming. "You're all in for a big disappointment," I muttered.
"For your sake, I hope you're wrong," said Ivan.
"For all our sakes," said Fedyar.
I lost track of time. Night and day passed through the windows of the coach. I spent most of my time staring out at the landscape, searching for landmarks to give me some sense of the familiar. I expected that we would take side roads, but instead we stuck to the Vi, and Fedyar explained that the Darkling had opted for speed over stealth. He was hoping to get me safe behind Os Alta's double walls before rumor of my power spread to the enemy spies and assassins who operated within Ravka's borders. We kept a brutal pace. Occasionally we stopped to change horses, and I was allowed to stretch my legs. When I was able to sleep, my dreams were plagued by monsters. Once I awoke with a start, my heart pounding, to find Fedyar watching me. Ivan was asleep beside him, snoring loudly.
"Who's Mal?" he asked.
I realized I must have been talking in my sleep. Embarrassed, I glanced at the Oprichniki guards, flanking me. One stared impassively forward. The other was dozing. Outside, the afternoon sun shone through a grove of birchwood trees as we rumbled past. "No one," I said. "A friend."
"The tracker,"
I nodded. "He was with me on the Shadow Fold. He saved my life."
"And you saved his."
I opened my mouth to disagree, but stopped. Had I saved Mal's life? The thought brought me up short.
"It's a great honor," said Fedyar, "to save a life. You saved many."
"Not enough," I murmured, thinking of the terrified look on Alexei's face as he was pulled into the darkness. If I had this power, why hadn't I been able to save him, or any of the others who had perished on the fold? I looked at Fedyar. "If you really believe that saving a life is an honor, then why not become a healer instead of a heartrender?" Fedyar considered the passing scenery.
"Of all Grisha, Korporalkai have the hardest road. We require the most training and the most study. At the end of it all, I felt I could save more lives as a heartrender."
"As a killer?" I asked in surprise.
"As a soldier," Fedyar corrected.
He shrugged.
"To kill or to cure," he said with a sad smile. "We each have our own gifts."
Abruptly, his expression changed. He sat up straight and jabbed Ivan in the side.
"Wake up!"
The coach had stopped. I looked around in confusion. "Are we?" I began, but the guard beside me clapped a hand over my mouth and put a finger to his lips. The coach door flew open and a soldier ducked his head in.
"There's a fallen tree across the road," he said, "but it could be a trap. Be alert and..."
He never finished the sentence. A shot rang out and he fell forward, a bullet in his back. Suddenly the air was full of panicked cries and the teeth-rattling sound of rifle fire as a volley of bullets struck the coach.
"Get down!"
yelled the guard beside me, shielding my body with his own, as Ivan kicked the dead soldier out of the way and pulled the door closed.
Fjordins, said the guard, peering outside.
Ivan turned to Fedyor and grabbed the guard beside me.
Fedyor, go with him. You take this side. We'll take the other. At all costs, defend the coach.
Fedyor pulled a large knife from his belt and handed it to me.
Stay close to the floor and stay quiet.
The Grisha waited with the guards, crouching by the windows. Then, at a signal from Ivan, they leapt from either side of the coach, slamming the doors behind them. I huddled on the floor, clutching the knife's heavy hilt, my knees to my chest, my back pressed against the base of the seat. Outside, I could hear the sounds of fighting, metal on metal, grunts and shouts, horses whinnying. The coach shook as a body slammed against the glass of the window. I saw with horror that it was one of my guards. His body left a red smear against the glass as he slid from view. The coach door flew open, and a man with a wild yellow-bearded face appeared. I scrambled to the other side of the coach, the knife held out before me. He barked something to his compatriots in his strange Fjordan tongue and reached for my leg. As I kicked out at him, the door behind me opened, and I nearly tumbled into another bearded man. He grabbed me under the arms, pulling me roughly from the coach as I howled and slashed out with the knife. I must have made contact because he cursed and loosened his grip on me. I struggled to my feet and ran. We were in a wooded glen where the Vi narrowed to pass between two sloping hills. All around me, soldiers and Grisha were fighting with bearded men. Trees burst into flames, caught in the line of Grisha fire. I saw Fedyor throw his hand out, and the man before him crumpled to the ground, clutching his chest, blood trickling from his mouth. I ran without direction, clambering up the nearest hill, my feet slipping on the fallen leaves that covered the forest floor, my breath coming in gasps. I made it halfway up the slope before I was tackled from behind. I fell forward, the knife flying from my hands as I put my arms out to break my fall. I twisted and kicked as the yellow-bearded man grabbed hold of my legs. I looked desperately down to the glen, but the soldiers and Grisha below me were fighting for their lives, clearly outnumbered and unable to come to my aid. I struggled and thrashed, but the Fjordan was too strong. He climbed on top of me, using his knees to pin my arms to my sides, and reached for his knife.
"I'll gut you right here, witch," he snarled in a heavy Fjordan accent.
At that moment, I heard the pounding of hooves, and my attacker turned his head to look down the road. A group of riders roared into the glen, their kefta streaming red and blue, their hands blazing fire and thunder. The lead rider was dressed in black. The darkling slid from his mount and threw his hands wide, then brought them together with a resounding boom. Skeins of darkness shot from his clasped hands, snaking through the glen, finding the Fjordan assassins, then slithering up their bodies to swathe their faces in seething shadow. They screamed. Some dropped their swords, others waved them blindly. I watched in mingled awe and horror as the Ravkin fighters seized the advantage, cutting down the blinded, helpless men with ease. The bearded man on top of me muttered something I did not understand. I thought it might be a prayer. He was staring, frozen at the darkling, his terror palpable. I took my chance.
"I'm here,"
I called down the hillside. The darkling's head turned. He raised his hands.
"Nyej,"
bleated the Fjordan, his knife held high.
"I don't need to see to put my knife through her heart."
I held my breath. Silence fell in the glen, broken only by the moans of dying men. The darkling dropped his hands.
"You must realize that you are surrounded," he said calmly, his voice carrying through the trees.
The assassin's gaze darted right and left, then up to the crest of the hill where Ravkin soldiers were emerging, rifles at the ready. As the Fjordan looked around frantically, the darkling edged a few steps up the slope.
"No closer!"
the man shrieked. The darkling stopped.
"Give her to me," he said. "And I'll let you scurry back to your king."
The assassin gave a crazed little giggle.
"Oh, no. Oh, no, I don't think so," he said, shaking his head,
his knife held high above my pounding heart, its cruel point gleaming in the sun.
The Darkling doesn't spare lives.
He looked down at me. His lashes were light blonde, almost invisible.
He will not have you,
he crooned softly.
He will not have the witch. He will not have this power, too.
He raised the knife higher and yelled,
Skirden Fjerda!
The knife plunged down in a shining arc. I turned my head, squeezing my eyes shut in terror, and as I did, I glimpsed the Darkling, his arm slashing through the air in front of him. I heard another crack like thunder, and then nothing. Slowly, I opened my eyes and took in the horror before me. I opened my mouth to scream, but no sound would come. The man on top of me had been cut in two. His head, his right shoulder, and his arm lay on the forest floor, his white hand still clasping the knife. The rest of him swayed for a moment above me, a dark wisp of smoke fading in the air beside the wound that ran the length of his severed torso. Then what remained of him fell forward. I found my voice and screamed. I crawled backward, scrambling away from the mutilated body, unable to get to my feet, unable to look away from the awful sight, my body shaking uncontrollably. The Darkling hurried up the hill and knelt beside me, blocking my view of the corpse.
Look at me, he instructed.
I tried to focus on his face, but all I could see was the assassin's severed body, his blood pooling in the damp leaves.
What did you do to him?
I asked, my voice quavering.
What I had to do. Can you stand?
I nodded shakily. He took my hands and helped me to my feet. When my gaze slid back to the corpse, he took hold of my chin and drew my eyes back to his.
At me,
he commanded. I nodded and tried to keep my eyes trained on the Darkling as he led me down the hill and called out orders to his men.
Clear the road. I need 20 riders.
The girl? Ivan asked.
Rides with me, said the Darkling.
He left me by his horse as he went to confer with Ivan and his captains. I was relieved to see Fedor with them, clutching his arm but looking otherwise uninjured. I patted the horse's sweaty flank and breathed in the clean leather smell of the saddle, trying to slow the beating of my heart and to ignore what I knew lay behind me on the hillside. A few minutes later, I saw soldiers and Grisha mounting their horses. Several men had finished clearing the tree from the road, and others were riding out with the much-battered coach.
A decoy, said the Darkling, coming up beside me. We'll take the southern trails. It's what we should have done in the first place.
So, you do make mistakes, I said without thinking. He paused in the act of pulling on his gloves, and I pressed my lips together nervously. I didn't mean...
Of course I make mistakes, he said.
His mouth curved into a half-smile.
Just not often.
He raised his hood and offered me his hand to help me onto the horse. For a moment I hesitated. He stood before me, a dark rider cloaked in black, his features in shadow. The image of the severed man loomed up in my mind, and my stomach turned. As if he'd read my thoughts, he repeated,
I did what I had to, Alina.
I knew that. He had saved my life, and what other choice did I have? I put my hand in his and let the Darkling help me into the saddle. He slid up behind me and kicked the horse into a trot. As we left the glen, I felt the reality of what had just happened sink into me.
You're shaking, he said.
I'm not used to people trying to kill me.
Really? I hardly notice anymore.
I turned to look at him. The trace of a smile was still there, but I wasn't entirely sure he was kidding. I turned back around and said, And I did just see a man get sliced in half. I kept my voice light, but I couldn't hide the fact that I was still trembling. The Darkling switched his reins to one hand and pulled off one of his gloves. I stiffened as I felt him slide his bare palm under my hair and rested on the nape of my neck. My surprise gave way to calm as that same sense of power and surety flooded through me. With one hand cupping my head, he kicked the horse into a canter. I closed my eyes and tried not to think, and soon, despite the movement of the horse, despite the terrors of the day, I fell into a troubled sleep.
Chapter 5. The next few days passed in a blur of discomfort and exhaustion. We stayed off the Vi and kept to the side roads and narrow hunting trails, moving as quickly as the hilly and sometimes treacherous terrain would allow. I lost all sense of where we were or how far we had gone. After the first day, the Darkling and I had ridden separately, but I found that I was always aware of where he was in the column of riders. He didn't say a word to me, and as the hours and days wore on, I started to worry that I'd somehow offended him, though, given how little we'd spoken, I wasn't sure how I could have managed it. Occasionally, I caught him looking at me, his eyes cool and unreadable. I'd never been a particularly good rider, and the pace the Darkling set was taking its toll. No matter which way I shifted in my saddle, some part of my body ached. I stared listlessly at my horse's twitching ears and tried not to think of my burning legs or the throbbing in my lower back. On the fifth night, when we stopped to make camp in an abandoned farm, I wanted to leap from my horse in joy. But I was so stiff that I settled for sliding awkwardly to the ground. I thanked the soldier who saw to my mount, and waddled slowly down a small hill to where I could hear the soft gurgle of a stream. I knelt by the bank on shaky legs and washed my face and hands in the cold water. The air had changed over the last couple of days, and the bright blue skies of autumn were giving way to a sullen gray. The soldiers seemed to think that we would reach Os Alta before any real weather came on. And then what? What would happen to me when we reached the little palace? What would happen when I couldn't do what they wanted me to do? It wasn't wise to disappoint kings or darklings. I doubted they'd just send me back to the regiment with a pat on the back. I wondered if Mal was still in Kribirsk. If his wounds had healed, he might already have been sent back across the fold or onto some other assignment. I thought of his face disappearing into the crowd in the Grisha tent. I hadn't even had a chance to say goodbye. In the gathering dusk, I stretched my arms and back and tried to shake the feeling of gloom that had settled over me. "It's probably for the best," I told myself. How would I have said goodbye to Mal anyway? "Thanks for being my best friend and making my life bearable. Oh, and sorry I fell in love with you for a while there. Make sure to write."
"What are you smiling at?"
I whirled, peering into the gloom. The Darkling's voice seemed to float out of the shadows. He walked down to the stream, crouching on the bank to splash water on his face and through his dark hair.
"Well?" he asked, looking up at me.
"Myself," I admitted.
"Are you that funny?"
"I'm hilarious." The Darkling regarded me in what remained of the twilight. I had the disquieting sensation that I was being studied. Other than a bit of dust on his kefta, our trek seemed to have taken little toll on him. My skin prickled with embarrassment as I became keenly aware of my torn, too large kefta, my dirty hair, and the bruise the Fjärden assassin had left on my cheek. Was he looking at me and regretting his decision to drag me all this way? Was he thinking that he'd made another of his infrequent mistakes? "I'm not Grisha," I blurted.
"The evidence suggests otherwise," he said with little concern. "What makes you so certain?"
"Look at me."
"I'm looking."
"Do I look like Grisha to you?" Grisha were beautiful. They didn't have spotty skin and dull brown hair and scrawny arms. He shook his head and rose.
"You don't understand at all," he said,
and began walking back up the hill. "Are you going to explain it to me?"
"Not right now, no."
I was so furious I wanted to smack him on the back of his head, and if I hadn't seen him cut a man in half, I might have done just that. I settled for glaring at the space between his shoulder blades as I followed him up the hill. Inside the farm's broken-down barn, the Darkling's man had cleared a space on the earthen floor and built a fire.
One of them had caught and killed a grouse, and was roasting it over the flames. It made a poor meal shared among all of us, but the Darkling did not want to send his men ranging into the woods for game. I took a place by the fire and ate my small portion in silence. When I'd finished, I hesitated for only a moment before wiping my fingers on my already filthy kefta. It was probably the nicest thing I'd ever worn or would wear, and something about seeing the fabric stained and torn made me feel particularly low. In the light from the fire, I watched the opritchniki sitting side by side with the Grisha. Some of them had already drifted away from the fire to bed down for the night. Others had been posted to the first watch. The rest sat talking as the flames ebbed, passing a flask back and forth. The Darkling sat with them. I'd noticed that he had taken no more than his share of the grouse. And now he sat beside his soldiers on the cold ground, a man second in power only to the king. He must have felt my gaze because he turned to look at me, his granite eyes glimmering in the firelight. I flushed. To my dismay, he rose and came to sit beside me, offering me the flask. I hesitated and then took a sip, grimacing at the taste. I'd never liked kvass, but the teachers at Keremzin had drunk it like water. Mal and I had stolen a bottle once. The beating we'd taken when we were caught had been nothing compared to how miserably sick we'd been. Still, it burned going down, and the warmth was welcome. I took another sip and handed the flask back to him. "Thank you," I said with a little cough. He drank, staring into the fire, and then said, "All right. Ask me." I blinked at him, taken aback. I wasn't sure where to begin. My tired mind had been brimming with questions, worrying in a state between panic and exhaustion and disbelief since we'd left Kribirsk. I wasn't sure that I had the energy to form a thought, and when I opened my mouth, the question that came out surprised me. "How old are you?" He glanced at me, bemused.
"I don't know exactly."
"How can you not know?" The Darkling shrugged.
"How old are you exactly?"
I flashed him a sour look. I didn't know the date of my birth. All the orphans at Keremzin were given the Duke's birthday in honor of our benefactor. "Well then, roughly, how old are you?"
"Why do you want to know?"
"Because I've heard stories about you since I was a child, but you don't look much older than I am," I said honestly.
"What kind of stories?"
"The usual kind," I said with some annoyance. "If you don't want to answer me, just say so."
"I don't want to answer you."
"Oh." Then he sighed and said,
120, give or take."
"What?" I squeaked. The soldier sitting across from me glanced over. "That's impossible," I said more quietly. He looked into the flames.
"When a fire burns, it uses up the wood. It devours it, leaving only ash. Grisha power doesn't work that way."
"How does it work?"
"Using our power makes us stronger. It feeds us instead of consuming us. Most Grisha live long lives."
"But not 120 years.
"No," he admitted. "The length of a Grisha's life is proportional to his or her power. The greater the power, the longer the life. And when that power is amplified..."
He trailed off with a shrug. "And you're a living amplifier. Like Ivan's bear." The hint of a smile tugged at the corner of his mouth.
"Like Ivan's bear."
An unpleasant thought occurred to me. "But that means..."
"That my bones or a few of my teeth would make another Grisha very powerful."
"Well, that's completely creepy. Doesn't that worry you a little bit?"
"No," he said simply. "Now you answer my question. What kind of stories were you told about me?"
I shifted uncomfortably. "Well, our teachers told us that you strengthened the Second Army by gathering Grisha from outside of Ravka."
"I didn't have to gather them. They came to me, other countries don't treat their Grisha so well as Ravka, he said grimly. The Fjerdans burn